Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. He's an author, and this is his 3-hour audio book. Wonder who dies in the end? Let's find out. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
You know, the very thing that I thought would frustrate all of us about Lou Lamoriello has in fact turned into one of his most endearing traits. I mean, as much as you can link the word endearing in the same phrase as Lou Lamoriello. Lamoriello came to Toronto with a reputation as being someone who controlled the message both inside and outside the dressing room, whose desire was to subjugate the individual for the betterment of the collective. This, I thought, would be easier said, or in Lou's case, not said, than done. This, I thought, might fly in New Jersey, but no way it would work in Toronto. No way it would work in the center of the hockey universe, and man, was I wrong. I know it can be frustrating for the folks in our business who thrive in rumors and leaks to suddenly find out that the Leafs are now run by adults who are adept at getting things done in the shadows, or at least savvy enough to be opaque about important matters. But, you know, with all due respect to ourselves, the end game is winning the Stanley Cup, not feeding the rumor mill. So I loved it when I heard Lamoriello dismiss a question yesterday about the pressure that will be placed on presumptive number one pick Austin Matthews by saying the only face of the franchise is going to be the logo on the front of the jersey. I mean, I love that just as much as I love the manner in which Lamoriello, Mike Babcock, and everybody else in a suit has succeeded in turning the Maple Leafs dressing room into something of a safe haven for players. That's a necessity for a team that, for the next few seasons, will be working in some awfully young, impressionable athletes into this biggest of hockey markets. But you know what? It can also create an environment in which a bigger personality can ultimately flourish too, while still playing for the crest on the front of the jersey instead of the name of the back. The team Austin Matthews will join tonight is ready for him. Readier than it's ever been.
The Jeff Blair Show is on the air on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Join the conversation with Jeff on Twitter using the hashtag Blair Show or call 416-870-0590. Now, here's Jeff Blair.
Well, I think we've had some experience with that with some players in the past, and certainly Mike has, and certainly Brendan was one of them, a year. So I think we'll do the best job we possibly can with that, and we'll ask the cooperation out of you people with that also. I don't think there's any player that's going to be the face of this franchise. The logo will be the face of this franchise.
That was Lou Lamoriello yesterday, a little more than 24 hours before the Toronto Maple Leafs will step to the podium, or Gary Bettman will step to the podium in Buffalo tonight and announce that the Maple Leafs have selected Austin Matthews with the first choice overall. And as I said in my little intro, Lou Lamoriello can be maddening. It's not easy being an old school guy, but I think it's a necessity. I really do, in this marketplace, to have to take the type of approach that Lamoriello is taking. I love what he said. It's not just a cliche to say it's about the crest in the front as opposed to the name on the back. I really, really think that in this market, it's, first of all, a way to maintain your sanity if you're a player. But secondly, I really do think that it's the key to success. I mean, I've said that a lot in this city, that one of the things you cannot do, whether you're a hockey coach, a general manager, or a hockey player, is pour fuel in the fire. The fire is always burning in Toronto when it comes to hockey. It's always burning in Toronto. There's always somebody unhappy about something. It's just the way it is. That's the type of market this is. The last thing you need is somebody pouring a little fuel on it by misspeaking or making a statement that's a little too open-ended. It's, I got to admit, I'm liking Lou Lamoriello a lot more than I thought I would. And as I said, when Austin Matthews joins the Leafs tonight, he is going to be joining an organization that is ready for Austin Matthews. Quite frankly, I don't know if this organization was up to the caring, the nurturing, the development you need to give a number one pick. I don't know if it's been up to that at any point in the past 10 years until now. Gord Stellick is host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He will also be an integral part of our draft coverage from Buffalo. And we will have the NHL draft covered completely from top to bottom. Hockey Central at noon will be live from the First Niagara Center today at 12 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan of Sportsnet Ontario. Gord Stellick, Todd Hlushko, and Jeff Merrick anchoring that. Tim and Sid will be live from the Leafs draft party at Real Sports at 5 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. The draft itself gets going at 6:30 with first-round coverage on Sportsnet Ontario. Radio coverage on Sportsnet 590 The Fan begins at 7 o'clock from 7 to 8 on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, continued from 8 to 10 p.m. on sportsnet.ca/590 as we turn the radio waves over to the Toronto Blue Jays. And we will have a round one recap for you at 10 p.m. on sportsnet.ca/590 with Peter Labardius, Derek Wills, and Pat Steinberg. And then a special live edition of Merrick versus Wyshynski at approximately 10:30 p.m. on sportsnet.ca/590. And then Mr. Stellick will be back tomorrow. Rounds 2 to 7 of the draft beginning at 10 a.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. At this point, I'm going to take a deep breath. I'm going to have a little sip of coffee. I'm going to bring in Gord Stellick. How are you, Mr. Stellick?
Jeff, I am outstanding. Right outside First Niagara Center, so all set. Very pumped.
If folks haven't been down to Buffalo in the last 4 years or so, the area around First Niagara Center, the Marriott, the whole waterfront area there, it's remarkable. Listen, this is going to be a terrific party. It is really going to be a terrific party.
They had the draft here, the 90 or 91, and it was you're right. It was the old Buffalo that was every year. It seemed another chunk of it around the arena was lost. They've done a great job. This is a great showcase for them. And it's going to be a great party, and the Toronto fans have really made it. Even though there's no guessing, it's like the coronation tonight. And I would say there's more Toronto people than any other people that will be here this evening.
Do you agree with my assessment, Gord, that this is an organization that it hasn't always been ready to sort of welcome, develop, and nurture the first pick overall? But I really believe it is now.
Well, it's funny, ever since Cliff Fletcher said draft schmaft, which, you know, people actually embraced because before that was all about developing and it never happening, and he was trying to get results now. You're right. I mean, not only first overall picks, but just in general, first round picks. They've never been nurtured, developed the right way. And in Lou Lamoriello's case, you know, whether it was Scott Niedermeyer way back when with the Leaf pick and other guys, the litany of first round picks and that he slowly developed. It was his way. There was no rushing. There was patience. There was no urgency. There was, you know, nobody was going to tell you to do otherwise. And I think, Jeff, I heard you talk about it. I agree with you that I was glad. I was concerned when Brendan Shanahan wasn't naming anybody, you know, who was going to be the guy. And I know a lot of people said, why Lou Lamoriello in his 70s and all those other years? Well, it's exactly what it needed. It needed this kind of organization structure that guys bought into and fans bought into. And for a first overall pick, it's going to be it's not going to be a rush, and you're going to be sheltered a little bit, not the expectations, not the you know, the high expectations and the big ball. So I agree with you. It was 31 years ago. I was the guy that got to meet Wendell Clark with a jersey, and you know, Wendell turned out to be a huge positive as a player, even bigger as a person and a character and all those other things. And you know, I believe Austin Matthews has the chance to do all that and even then some as a player.
What have you learned about Austin Matthews in the past couple of days, you know, since you've been down in Buffalo, or just as the talk about the draft, you know, increased as the draft got closer, once the Stanley Cup was over, is there something you found out about Austin Matthews, something somebody's told you, or, you know, something that just kind of came out of, not came out of the blue about Austin Matthews, but something that maybe surprised you a bit?
You go back, and he was the perceived number one pick, and quite often that's a hard mantle to hold during the course of the year. So he's embraced it and taken it. And the fact he decided to be a boy playing among men, you know, something different, going mm-hmm. over there and doing that and thriving in that environment shows to me he's also in for more of a worldly experience, you know, which you like about that guy. Also embracing coming to Toronto, just a kid that went to games in Phoenix and liked hockey. His family was not a hockey family. They were a sports family, and talked his parents into letting him play hockey. And, you know, I got a kick about a simple story that when he turned 18 last fall, and his mom made pasta for the team, you know, and that kind of thing. I mean, think about 18. Then all the guys wanted his mom's pasta recipe because it was a big hit. It was his way of getting, you know, getting in and getting to know the older players on his team overseas. So that's more what I found. The more I found is he's not a guy that speaks just in monosyllabic sound bites. He's a guy that I think will embrace the big stage, which is a big plus when you have that being Toronto.
Conversation with Gord Stellick on the Jeff Blair Show. Gord will be anchoring our draft coverage from Buffalo, which will begin this afternoon with Hockey Central at noon. It's going to be a long couple of days for you.
That's okay. That's all. You know, it's amazing that the hockey draft, I think more so than others, is it's the first day of the rest of your life. It's the first day of the start of the next season. And I think you've seen that Toronto Maple Leaf fans that put everything on the back burner. Then the playoffs are done. And then once the lottery happened, I know a few weeks ago, and they found out their first overall, they just bought all the tickets up here. And that they're looking forward to that. And then the Freddie Anderson thing this past week has got them excited. The possibility of Steven Stamkos or another free agent. I mean, it's a busy few days, Jeff, but unlike the last 25 games of the regular season where you're kind of going through the motions for a team that knew what they were going to do and where they expected to finish, these are tangible strides mm-hmm. moving ahead. And that's good. Fans deserve that, and we all embrace that.
How important do you think it is that, and you know, this whole, the dynamic of the Leafs dressing room in the last year just kind of intrigues me because it, you know, I keep thinking back to one of the few things John Farrell ever told me that I actually believed and I actually took to heart was he was discussing how Terry Francona was so good as manager of the Boston Red Sox because in that market, he created a sense that regardless of what was going on, regardless of what was being written or talked about or on TV or radio, when the players came into the locker room, it was a safe haven. And the way the Red Sox locker room was designed, the manager's office was effectively the first thing you saw when you went into the locker room. I mean, it was in the locker room. The coaches would change in the locker room. So, you know, it was interesting because it really, and you got the sense during the playoffs, Gord, that it really was a safe haven. Guys could go in there, and yeah, the media was there, but guys could go in there and be themselves and let, you know, cut up a little bit. The manager's door was literally always open. It was just, in some cases, just next to your locker if you wanted to go in and talk to the manager. And John Farrell talked about how vital this was in that type of a market. And I kind of get the sense that it's the same thing in Toronto. You know, you really do need to create that sense of the locker room as being that, not a sacred space necessarily, but a space where only good stuff happens and only, you know, stuff that happens in general is designed to make you a better person or a better player.
Yeah, and they had that great 30 for 30 doc about the Boston Red Sox in the playoffs, and you really got a sense of that, Jeff, about and why they won those couple. And, you know, two parts. One is Lou Lamoriello keeps it like a sanctuary, and, mm-hmm. and that's, he did that in New Jersey, and a lot of guys, like the equipment guys, complain, well, but we can't no longer go in the dressing room to bring sticks to the guys and stuff. You got to go to hotel rooms, and Lou doesn't care. That's exactly for what you say. And Jeff, you know, Phil Kessel won the Stanley Cup. I'm happy for Phil Kessel. But it was allowed. There was a supply teacher in charge after Randy Carlyle left. And I mean overall as an organization. It became a toxic environment, just like a workplace or a marriage or a friendship. And it impacted everybody. And that's why some of the guys had to be moved. And then other guys like Tyler Bozak and Nazem Kadri and others had to understand there was a new structure in town, new expectations in town, and they embraced it. You know, guys want that as far as it goes. They want the structure, but they also want the space, like that diplomatic immunity that they go somewhere and they know they can be themselves and they know they can thrive as professional hockey players and people. And that was huge. That was a huge factor in things sliding so negatively for a while. And that's a big part that Lou Lamoriello in particular has brought back on track.
Once this draft is over, what do you think the next step will be for the Maple Leafs? You know, I'm intrigued with all the draft picks they have in the next couple of years. If ever a team was kind of positioned to maybe take a run at an RFA or to try to make just make a move that we just can't see. And the Leafs have done that. You know, kept their cards close to their vest. Do you think that there's some sort of twist, some sort of surprise in the work involving the Leafs? You know, Steven Stamkos almost seems too obvious, and the sense you get now is that chances are that he may re-sign in Tampa as much as anything, Gord. So what do you expect to see the Leafs do for their next move?
The one RFA that could be interesting, I don't think Toronto would be involved, is Seth Jones. I think Columbus is a little bit worried that, you know, someone may put an offer sheet in front of Seth Jones, and that's their problem to deal with. That's, you know, they almost did that with Brandon Saad, so I don't know if Chicago might return the favor. That could
right.
happen. But, you know, the other free agents out there, Lucic and Backes, and, you know, Okposo was a nice free agent as well. So maybe it ends up being one of those if they don't get Steven Stamkos. I don't think I think Freddie Anderson was a nice, pleasant surprise. I think that was one. That Lou Lamoriello, the guy that drafted Marty Brodeur and saw solid goaltending for two decades. And then, more importantly, Jeff, was not afraid to knock his nose out of joint and a couple of years ago make the big trade of the draft getting Corey Schneider, because he just understands, you know what, you may be rebuilding, but you cannot have substandard goaltending. And I think that's a great message to Maple Leaf fans that, and Freddie Anderson is a cut above Toskala and Raycroft and, you know, all those guys that, you know, came in deals that way and Bernier that didn't pan out. So I thought that was kind of a neat message to send, because at a minimum, let's have solid goaltending and build from there. But hey, you never know if there's another kind of trade on the works, but I don't see a big surprise right now. I think the other part is find out some of these guys that we got infatuated with because we were so desperate for, you know, for the future, whether it's Nylander and Kapanen and Hyman and all those guys, but then some of them played in the ordinary in the American Hockey League playoffs. You know, how exactly they grow and develop as players. Mitch Marner, is he a guy that can make the jump right away? So, I mean, more internally, there's probably more questions that way. But in the city that has Lou Lamoriello and Brendan Shanahan and Mike Babcock over the last 2 years off the ice, certainly has not been adverse to the odd surprise or two.
Gord, I'm going to let you run, rest up. You've got a busy 2 days in front of you. Should be a fascinating 2 days as well. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Gord Stellick, host of our Leafs Nation pre- and post-game in Sportsnet 590. The Fan again. Gord, Todd Lushko, Jeff Merrick will be on the scene in Buffalo today at First Niagara Center. Hockey Central at noon from 12 o'clock. Tim and Sid will be live from the Leafs draft party at 5. 6:30 p.m. is when first round coverage begins in Sportsnet Ontario. Radio coverage will go live from 7 to 8 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 with Gord and Todd. It'll be continued from 8 to 10 p.m. on sportsnet.ca/590 as we turn the station over to the Blue Jays, who are playing the Chicago White Sox tonight. We'll have a round one recap at 10 p.m. on sportsnet.ca/590. Special live edition of Merrick versus Wyshynski at 10:30 p.m. on sportsnet.ca/590. And rounds 2 to 7, the coverage will continue tomorrow starting at 10 a.m. on Sportsnet Ontario and sportsnet.ca/590. Radio coverage moves to sportsnet.ca/590 at 1:30 p.m. This is like, I feel like I'm reading out the train schedule. Post-draft analysis with Ben Ennis, Garrett Joyce, and Rory Boylan from 9 to 11 p.m. tomorrow night on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And we're going to be joined in a few minutes by Ryan Dixon, senior writer at Sportsnet Magazine and Sportsnet.ca, who wrote a terrific profile on Austin Matthews. And, you know, this is it's all going to be about Austin Matthews all day. And the Raptors drafted last night. The NBA held its draft. Dan Tolsman, the director of player personnel for the Raptors, will join us at 10 o'clock. So we will not leave the Raptors Untouched. Jonah Carey joined us. And then, of course, Baseball Central. Eric Kratz, Pittsburgh Pirates catcher, is going to join us. And you're saying, Jeff, why are you going to have Eric Kratz on? Well, Barker and I both like him. And two, he did something this week that nobody else has ever done. He hit and pitched in a game for the Pirates. Pitched and caught in a game for the Pirates. And he did that earlier this year for Kansas City. Close. He did it earlier this year for Houston. Nobody else has pitched and caught twice in a season for two different teams. So Eric Kratz will join us. But we're going to open the phone lines at 416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590. Ahead of the draft and ahead of Ryan Dixon joining us. And do you agree with what I said and what Gord Stellick said? That, this organization, I don't think was ready for a guy like Austin Matthews for the longest time. I don't think Brian Burke's Toronto Maple Leafs would have known how to develop and how to take care of a player like Austin Matthews, who would show up with not just the promise of great skill, but the pressure of being the first pick overall. It's a great time for this organization. And I've got to think, if you're a Leafs fan, that you're confident that this particular group will know how to develop these kids. There's going to be a lot of kids in this team next year. You think of the names. You think of how young this team is going to be. It's going to be a challenge. You're going to have a lot of young guys in a big city, the biggest hockey market in the world. This is going to be a bit of a test. It's going to be a bit of a test. 416-870-0590. *590. 1-888-666-0590. Drew in Port Credit. You're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hello, Drew.
Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Good, good.
Excellent. First off, I think Lou and Babs are the perfect duo to coach the young kids and to get them off to a great start, mainly because they've done it throughout their careers. The past regime was basically coupling under pressure from upper management. And I think also this is another reason why Stamkos is actually going to come here, because he's a perfect mentor for the young kids as well. Being a born leader, captain, he's been a leader wherever he's gone.
Yeah, it's funny, and I'm certainly, I don't pretend to be close to the Stamkos situation at all, but I don't know, reading the tea leaves, listening to what people like Elliot Friedman have said, other people who are pretty much connected, pretty well connected, I almost get the sense that we're at the point now where people would be a little surprised if Steven Stamkos signed here.
I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever. I mean, he's played for Babcock. He knows the regime. He knows the management. And it's his hometown. I mean, aside from the fact that he probably wants to stay in Tampa, where he spent his entire career. But I mean, he's got to look at it. I mean, Tampa's probably not going to re-sign him with the cap and with the expansion draft coming out. They got a bunch of RFAs they have to re-sign. So Stamkos has got to go somewhere. So I think it's either going to be Detroit or Toronto. And I'm obviously, being a Leafs fan, I'm going to lean towards my Leafs.
Yeah, I everybody seems to be intrigued with what the Buffalo Sabres may offer Steven Stamkos. In some ways, for Steven Stamkos, it might be an option, a chance to be close to home without having to put up with bad choice of words, a chance to be close to home without necessarily having to deal with some of the things, some of the pressures that would come with being right here in Toronto. But again, I don't know. It's entirely possible Steven Stamkos does come here. But I don't know if it's as cut and dried as a lot of people once thought it was. You know, I don't know if it's simply Tampa or Toronto. I have no name here where we're going next. John and Markham, you're on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hello, John.
How are you, Seth?
Good.
Two things. The first, your premise about the calm zone in the Leafs dressing room or within the Leafs organization. I agree with you entirely that I can't think. I'm an old timer, so I go back to Peter Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think. It certainly wasn't in the Imlach era. I can't think of a time in my memory when the Leafs, when there was such a calmness around the Leafs. I respectfully, though, I don't think enough credit or any credit is given to Shanahan for that.
Mm-hmm.
My view is that's when it started. I can't think of a rumor of any substance that has come out since he took over.
Very true.
And when the man just exudes calmness.
Mm-hmm.
If that's a proper grammatical statement.
Yeah, no, it's entirely right, and it's entirely accurate. Yes, I think that maybe what I was talking about with Lamoriello is I think there is a real sense now that the sort of the day-to-day functioning of the team, that it's Lou Lamoriello and Mike Babcock who are kind of controlling what goes on in that, you know, within the walls of the dressing room. But, I mean, John, you're absolutely right. You have to work well with Lou Lamoriello, you have to be yourself, you have to be a certain type of guy. You know, I think you have to be a calm, studied, a guy who's willing to, a guy who's willing to kind of just be quiet, you know, and try to do stuff behind the scenes. And in that regard, I think he and Brendan have been a perfect fit.
I mean, Shanahan's got the best of both worlds. He's arguably the best job in hockey, and he's got one of the best mentors
Yep.
he could ever have.
Yeah, I agree completely. It's a great point. Thanks for the call. And yes, it's odd, but I guess when I talk about Lou Lamoriello, and now that John mentioned it, it kind of brought this home a bit. Talk about Lou Lamoriello. I almost now kind of include Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas and Mark Hunter. It's almost like I'm using Lou Lamoriello as a catch-all for the entire Leafs front office. And I think that's, you know, it's well said by John, because the things that have put this organization on the right path, the things that have made this organization or have turned this organization into such a calm, steady organization. He's right. It started when Brendan Shanahan came in. And I've made this point often. For our business, you know, the guys who cover the Leafs on a daily basis, guys who cover hockey on a daily basis, your currency is rumor. It's like that in every sport. And I understand that it must be hard covering a team where you have a guy like Lou Lamoriello and above him, Brendan Shanahan, and below him, Mike Babcock, who are so good at controlling the message. It makes our job harder, but you know what? I really, truly believe that it is fundamentally important for the long-term success of this group of hockey players that approach continue. This is one market where I think you need a GM who knows when to shut up. You know, you need a head coach who knows when to shut up. And I got back to this point I made earlier in the show. There's always going to be a fire in Toronto when it comes to the Leafs. Something's going to be burning. You absolutely cannot pour fuel in that. You may not be able to extinguish it entirely, and that's fine. That's what happens in a big market with lots of call-in shows and lots of newspapers. People are going to talk. People are going to write stuff. Some of it's not going to be true. Some of it's going to be half true. Some of it's going to be a pain in the ass. All that stuff. You can't snuff that out entirely. But what you can do is let it burn out on its own. That is exactly what this front office is good at doing. And it's exactly why Austin Matthews is going to be joining an organization that's ready for him. The city's ready for him. The fan base is ready for him. But mostly the organization is ready for him. That is hugely important. Ryan Dixon has written a profile on Austin Matthews. It's on Sportsnet.ca, Sportsnet Magazine as well. And Ryan Dixon will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues. It's draft day on the home of Austin Matthews. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
You thought Millard, Kiprios, and McLean worked a lot already. Now they'll work anytime you want. Subscribe to the Hockey Central podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. On demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm on the pursuit of happiness, and I know everything is shining, always gonna be gold. Hey, I'll be fine once again, I'll be good. I'm on the pursuit of happiness, and I know everything.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show. Dan Tolsman, Director of Player Personnel at the Toronto Raptors, joins us at 10 o'clock. Raptors' first pick, the NBA draft. Yesterday, Jakob Pertl will be in Toronto this afternoon and meet the media at the Air Canada Center. But the Raptors apparently attempting to trade the pick for Serge Ibaka. That deal fell through. Serge Ibaka would have been a great get for Masai Ujiri. But, I'll settle for a guy with Pertl's skill set and size, especially given the uncertainty surrounding Bismack Biyombo. I understand that, I understand that the Raptors are already a young team. They've got enough young players. And we talked about that. You don't want to have too many young players at the end of the bench. But I think this is a guy who will probably be able to at least find a spot in the rotation. So I'm quite pleased with the pick. Although, as I've said often, after hammering Brian Colangelo for picking Jonas Valanciunas, I have decided that any time the Raptors pick a big white guy, I'm going to say it's a good deal. Ryan Dixon. Speaking of drafts, Ryan Dixon, you would have to bring up Rafael Araújo. Not fair. He's Brazilian. Not fair, Derek. Not fair. Ryan, stop it. Ryan Dixon is a senior writer with Sportsnet Magazine and Sportsnet.ca. You can follow him at Dixon on Sports. And he's written a terrific feature in Austin Matthews, the presumptive first pick overall by the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight in Buffalo. Ryan Dixon joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Ryan, read a lot about Austin Matthews, saw him play in the junior, seen him play in TV, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Tell me something I probably don't know about him. Right? Tell me something that maybe didn't escape the editor's knife in the magazine piece.
Well, I just feel like, I mean, when a kid is going to be the first overall pick, you expect all the people who've played with him when he was a teenager or coached him when he was a teenager or even before his teenage years to say glowing things about him. But when I was talking to those people for my feature, it was just crazy how they all sort of said, look, I know you expect me to say these things, but with this guy, it's really true. And that was especially the case with Don Granato, Tony Granato's brother, who used to coach with the U.S. development program up until the end of this past year. Mm-hmm. So he had Matthews for a couple years there. He also coached Jack Eichel for not a full season there, but, you know, had, you know, pretty intimate knowledge of, you know, what kind of player Eichel was. And he pretty much said to me, look, the easiest way to put this is there's every other kid I've coached, and then there's this guy. And considering Eichel is one of those other guys, that is really telling you something. I mean, people really do go on and on about the drive and work ethic. And I know we're sort of getting desensitized to that in this day and age because, you know, increasingly that's just the ante to become a pro player. But with Austin Matthews, it just sounds like Granato was saying, forget hockey. He's just a born competitor. It just so happens that, you know, it's been channeled into hockey. And that's another interesting aspect with Matthews is, you know, given where he came from in Arizona, he easily could have become an elite athlete in the other sports he was into, i.e. he was a great baseball player, he's a golfer. And Granato said, there's no doubt in my mind he would have become a fantastic athlete in one of those sports, except the Coyotes were there and he got exposed to hockey and that's what he liked best. So here we are. And, you know, it's kind of interesting that it dovetails with the Las Vegas expansion. I mean, Austin Matthews is really evidence of, you know, Gary Bettman's plan to keep teams in the South. And if they didn't stick by those plans, if they weren't so, you know, stubborn at times, really, about doing it, I'm not sure that Austin Matthews is about to get drafted first overall by the Leafs.
You know, I linked to the column or to the article in my Monday column because of the point that you and Granato brought up that I found fascinating and I hadn't really thought of, but the fact that as a result of the Sun Belt strategy, you have a lot of former hockey players who have retired in Sun Belt states, and there are other reasons too, taxes and things of that nature, but they want to stay in the game. So you've essentially, it's almost like you've spread roots out, you know, into other parts of the country. And that doesn't mean that we're going to necessarily see 700 kids from California playing in the NHL in the next couple of years. But you know what? Could get 4 or 5.
And that's
something I think Gary Bettman deserves a little credit for.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the default mindset in Canada is, you know, let's get as many teams as possible into Canada because there is such an in-the-bone love of the game. But don't forget, I mean, this was always an endeavor to grow things, and you're absolutely seeing the fruit of it. And yeah, as Don pointed out, he's like, you know, you think my brother and my sister and I had people like this coaching us when we were growing up in Illinois? No way. And now you're seeing it. I mean, it's not even just the South, like St. Louis, you're seeing lots of people coming out of there now, like Logan Brown, who will probably be a top 10 pick because the guys, the Al McInneses, the Keith Tkachuks, of course, another guy, Matthew Tkachuk, who came out of there is going to be drafted high. You know, they're now growing up with this elite coaching because these guys want to stay in the game. They love hockey, and it's just natural that they would get involved. And all of a sudden, you know, grassroots programs that previously had essentially no expertise now have basically the best you could hope for. And yeah, Matt, I mean, one of Matthew's first coaches was a guy named Ron Fillion, who was just a journeyman minor pro guy who ended up coaching in the ECHL in Phoenix and putting down roots. And, you know, he was buddies with Claude Lemieux, who was playing in the South, and they got together and formed an academy. Next thing you know, you've got these kids playing together. So yeah, it's an interesting offshoot. And we're only now, because, you know, we're close to 30 years after Wayne Gretzky, but really the early 90s, mid 90s now, actually late 90s, when these kids were born, they're now growing up with these teams as opposed to just the team plunking in a new city and saying, love hockey. I mean, it takes time. And yeah, it's starting to bear fruit.
You know, I also wonder, it's got to say something about a kid, doesn't it, that he, for whatever reason, was able to go over and play in another country. And I know, you know, going to Switzerland, there's going to be some culture shock. It's not going to be overwhelming. But for a teenage kid, he's basically left a comfort zone to go someplace else to play hockey. That has to say something about a kid's mindset, his adaptability, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was all about just wanting to play against the best competition possible. Because as a guy on the U.S. national development team, I mean, he'd been exposed to NCAA hockey already and had like a goal a game in the 10 or 12 games, whatever it was they played. So, I mean, there he is saying, well, I could go play NCAA, but I kind of already know what I can do there. Or I could go play major junior, and I'm going to play against some guys who are younger than me and guys who are, you know, essentially my age, just a little bit older. So, yeah, he really wanted that challenge with this, you know, kind of quote-unquote extra year because he was a late birthday. And, yeah, I definitely think it speaks to his competitive nature, his understanding that, you know, if I want to get to where I need to go, I'm going to have to play against the best. I want to play against the best, and probably even knowing that, I don't know how much of a backlash there was ever going to be, but, you know, it still raised eyebrows, right? It still was a bold move that was going to trigger some questions. And, I do think it gives you some insight as to, you know, what exactly his mindset is and sort of this, you know, all-encompassing drive he seems to have in the mold of the, you know, the 21st century guys, the Crosbys, the Taves, who are just, you know, basically whatever it takes, that's what I want to do. Whatever I can do to improve myself, that's what I want to do. And I think that was the driving factor behind Matthew's decision to play in Switzerland.
Ryan, it's a terrific read. Again, it's in Sportsnet magazine. You can also read it at sportsnet.ca. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Ryan Dixon, senior writer for Sportsnet magazine at sportsnet.ca. His profile on Austin Matthews is tremendous. And you know, like I said, got me thinking. It didn't occur to me that one of the byproducts of Gary Bettman's Sunbelt strategy would be that you would have former NHL players retiring in some of these warm weather states for a variety of reasons and still get involved in hockey. And you're starting to see that. I mean, the very fact you can have a guy from Arizona who's the first pick overall. I mean, we've gotten used to seeing Americans go in the first round from different places, from Massachusetts, obviously, and we've seen some from California. Now we're seeing from Missouri and Arizona. And he by accident. And it's a terrific feature. And we're pleased that Ryan Dixon was able to join us. The Toronto Raptors drafted Jakob Poeltl with the first pick, their first choice, I should say, in the first round of the draft, the ninth pick overall. He is he's described an Austrian big man. He's certainly Austrian, and he's certainly big. Dan Tolsman is director of player personnel for the Toronto Raptors. We spent the first hour talking about the Leafs draft that has yet to happen. Let's talk about the Raptors draft that happened last night. Dan Tolsman of the Raptors joins us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.